Welcome to Ripen, a gardening lifestyle magazine, a production of Lifestyle Media Group. Today's audio episode is titled Cultivating Community. It's a conversation by our editor, Kimberly Bloom, with Stephen Hubbard, the farm director at New Garden Farm in Greensboro, North Carolina, a ministry of Church of the Redeemer at New Garden Park. This audio recording is adapted from our video, which presents a wide range of beautiful on-location visuals from their farm. Both the audio and video are included in our magazine feature at ripenlifestyle.com/newgardenfarm. Churches throughout the United States and the world have found that a garden ministry is an excellent way to connect with and engage both church attendees and their community. It helps the church meet needs on several levels: practical, social, spiritual, and more. Gardening is a dynamic way for the church to cultivate a community where fellowship can flourish. Now, let's listen to Kimberly and Stephen as they talk about New Garden Farm in Cultivating Community.
This is where the farm originally started 5 years ago. The entire property out here was covered with a foot of gravel. It was a landscaping nursery for, I think, maybe 15 years before that. And they covered, they laid down a layer of landscape fabric and then put a foot of gravel on every inch of the property that wasn't already covered by gravel pathways. Wow. Or cement pathways. And it's like miserable. Then if you're gonna farm anywhere, you've got to go in and dig underneath that and remove that manually. And so everything you see on the property today that is a farm, it's because we had to go in there, take everything out, all the topsoil out, all that gravel out, and then come and bring back all sorts of good soil material, organic matter, compost, to build up our ground from that level up. And so there's been a lot of work in these soils to get them to the point where they're just amazing at this point. And unfortunately, part of this one is amazing for weeds as well, which mm-hmm. is why you see this silage tarp on here. Yeah. We had a Bermuda coming from the other side of that fence and was just kind of growing in. We try to be all no-till. Mm-hmm. So the no-till operation works really well if you have your weed situation under control.
Yes.
It's when you don't have that Bermuda, especially under control, that it will come in and basically take your pristine environment and invade it.
We have evil crabgrass where
we are. Oh, yes, yes.
So it's pretty vicious. So you're doing layers, like a lasagna type of...
Well, it's interesting, you know, the lasagna gardening movement, you know, is like 30, 40 years old at the very least. And no-till gardening is kind of a kind of lasagna gardening.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But rather, whereas lasagna might say, we're going to put in a layer of straw and a layer of blood meal and a layer of cow manure and then another layer of grass that we cut and, you know, that kind of thing, and just build up. We'd say, well, what if we layered down amazing compost with loam? Mm-hmm. And then another layer of amazing compost with a little bit more loam, and then we put like leaf mold soil. You're familiar with leaf mold? Mm-hmm. So that leaf mold is gold if it's been aged, and we've got some of the back of the property for 2 years now. It's been aged.
Wow.
So then that is like the best material for a mulch on top, and so like those combinations create this pristine environment, and it is like a lasagna because you are building up from the soil. But unlike lasagna, you can plant seeds directly into that. It basically operates like a soil, but a soil that is perfect. Now we're reorienting these beds. We had a permaculture design for several years where, you know, they built all the beds on contour, mm-hmm. which is really great. And yet it's, as a market farmer, you know, it's
not efficient.
It's not. Yeah, exactly. The efficiencies of 50-foot beds where all of our row cover and all of our landscape fabric can all be the exact same length. We can have that consistency of expectation. Every bed we're planting is going to be 50 foot. So that's where we're unfortunately kind of, you know, ending the sort of the hippie phase of the garden, moving into something that's a little bit more productive.
tell me, just our listeners, just a little brief, how new Garden Park Farm came to be.
So that was really the vision of Alan Hawkins, who is he's basically the bishop in preparation right now for the Diocese of Christ Our Hope. Mm-hmm. So Alan was a consummate church planter, planted churches in Charlotte. I think he planted a church in Raleigh. And then he came to Greensboro 15 years ago to plant this, the Church of the Redeemer in Greensboro. And from the beginning, he had this vision of a park, farm, and abbey.
Okay.
So he came with this big dream of, mm-hmm. well, we don't want to just put a traditional parish. We want to do something that involves the church, that connects the nonprofits that are part of the church, that connects the church to the land, connects the church to the existing world outside of the church boundaries, mm-hmm. and that draws the people in. Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. Literally, like, part of his dream was to create the Garden of Eden on the property. So rather than sort of a limited landscape, we'll just put in some grass and a playground. You know, those are important things, nice to have. Mm-hmm. But said, how can we help people understand that, like, God started in a garden for a reason? Mm-hmm. He wanted us to be in a place that is beautiful, mm-hmm. and that is cared for, that there's sort of like people looking after what the space looks like, feels like, and you feel yourself connected to the land as a result of that, and those connections are bringing people together.
Mm-hmm. I know in Genesis, I always was taken when you read where it says God walked in the cool of the day.
Yes,
within there, and that's where I always feel like even the garden, the farm, is really, like Edith Schaefer used to say, leftover beauty of the Garden of Eden.
Yes, yeah, I think it was Dorothy Day. She had given someone a diamond, like somebody had given her a diamond for, like, here's a donation, a mm-hmm. diamond ring. And then she gave that diamond ring away to someone that was on the streets. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the donors was like, I can't believe you did that. And mm-hmm. she said, are diamonds just for the rich? Mm-hmm. And just like that idea of, like, the beauty is supposed to be for everyone. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be a welcome thing for the world. So Alan is a consummate vision caster and just an amazing, like, he is an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so as a church planter and entrepreneur, he was able to bring about this vision over a long period of time. And then 5 years ago, we got this property. This is a 9-acre property on kind of the edge of Greensboro that was a former plant nursery. Mm-hmm. And Alan had been looking for the church. They didn't move into a property for several years when they could have bought all mm-hmm. sorts of different properties, because they were looking for a property for with a church and land mm-hmm. so they can play out this vision. And I mean, it's not the kind of thing that most churches are used to, mm-hmm. but this church, because he was able to cast that consistent vision, like, this is bigger mm-hmm. than what you're thinking. Well, I know it's hard being in a high school. We're gonna stay there a couple more years until we find that perfect place. And they started on this property 5 years ago with the gravel, and they started work events, building the property up as a church.
So he really cast the vision for this, kept everybody motivated.
Huge.
As Stephen showed me diverse areas of the farm, we dug deeper into the diversity of their church community. According to Lifeway Research, most pastors say church should strive to achieve racial diversity, but few are. In contrast, New Garden Farm has grown a rich culture of diversity.
Growing crops that were familiar to them from their homeland that they couldn't get here because there are no African stores. So the people we would in most cases just give the crops away to the people in the congregation that was being maintained by Innocent, who is the gentleman out here who's leading these youth. Like, the church being a place where the strings of your homeland are being threaded through, created a kind of a culture that was, like, more likely to draw people in that, like, a, you know, just an East African service or something might not have done. The church, and again, this was Alan's leadership, he really wanted to create a space that was multi-ethnic. So they've got an Arabic-speaking service, a Swahili Kenyan Rwandan speaking service and an English speaking service, but the youth are all together.
Oh, wow.
The youth are all in one youth group, and literally at this point, half of the youth group are third culture kids.
Wow.
So it's been an amazing challenge, amazing opportunity to bring these worlds together.
How did you get involved at the farm?
So I first met Alan in 2017. Mm-hmm. There's an Anglican social justice network called Matthew 25. And I just randomly met Alan at a Matthew 25 and struck up a friendship. And over the course of several years, I would just call him out of the blue and say, hey, I'm struggling with this thing. And he's just a big visionary. He's got all these ideas. And so he was always available, you know, as I'd give him a call. And then years went by, and God has really been refining my call into what I now understand to be church-based farming. Mm-hmm. With the poor, bringing the poor in. And Alan has been helping me discern that call mm-hmm. over time. And in 2021, my wife and I were looking. We had been living in Austin, Texas for several years. I ran a homeless farm, the middle of a homeless community for 12 years.
Wow.
And we were looking for how do we bring this ministry to the land and the poor into the church. Mm-hmm. How do we connect it into the church? And Alan had this giant vision. And so I reached out to Alan and said, hey, what do you think about a church plant maybe mm-hmm. connected to a farm? And Alan, being the visionary he is, he said, hey, let's talk.
Yeah.
Didn't close off that idea at all. So it was a moment where, you know, that door might have been closed or might have been cracked, but instead he threw it wide open.
Wow.
And it was one of those, like, clearly God is into this, because I threw out two cities, one in Virginia and one in North Carolina, mm-hmm. As a possible place where we could do this church plant. So the one in Virginia was Danville, Virginia.
Okay.
So whenever I just sent an email to Alan, what do you think about a church plant connected to a farm in one of these cities? And Alan said, well, we've already got a church plant in Danville, Virginia. We're just starting it. We're launching it out. And I think a farm connected to that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like the door was open. I came out here on a kind of a sightseeing trip. And actually in that sightseeing trip, discerned that church plant in Virginia wasn't going to be a good fit for a farm. It's going to be a more traditional church plant. And Alan said, what do you think about coming here? And I was like, I've never thought about that. And do you have a position open? Well, it turned out that the gal that helped found the farm here, who did all the work for the last 5 years, she had had her first baby and was about to have her second baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she just had discerned that it was not, you know, going to be a good time anymore to be able to manage this farm the level that it needed to be managed at.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, this is perfect timing, Stephen, you could be, you know, stepping into my shoes. So like I went from living in Austin, trying to figure out how to do this in Austin for several years, to I can't believe I get to do exactly what I'm made for, farming in the context of the church, where I'm going out and reaching out to the poor, to the homeless, in this case, to the refugees, the refugee youth, and bringing them into the church and into the heart of the church, using them as God's tool to bring people in connection with the land and with each other and with himself.
Individuals and church leaders often presume they could never gain the knowledge, skills, resources, and capacity to garden. So cultivating community through gardening seems all the more daunting. But Stephen's story proves otherwise. You, being used in gardening ministry, begins with God planting the desire within you. In time, you become rooted in God's radical vision where fellowship flourishes.
So I moved to Austin, Texas in 2005, and at that point I had never put a plant or a seed in the ground.
Okay.
Like zero knowledge whatsoever, came from the suburbs of California. At that point, I felt like I was really good at writing papers
mm-hmm.
and, you know, watching football, you know, that kind of world that most people are living in. And then kind of through the course of a book discussion group, I started working in a friend's community garden. Mm-hmm. And it was like a small group of people. We had a Wendell Berry book, The Art of the Commonplace, one of my favorite books now. And we read that book chapter by chapter every other week for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So we'd spend half the time reading the chapter of the book, an essay, and discussing it. And then we'd spend half the time going out into his community garden plot mm-hmm. and just weeding or planting or doing whatever. And it was like a bug that I just caught. And I was like, this is amazing. I love this. And Wendell Berry specifically, he had this way of describing the land, his land specifically, that just, he had so much, his word is affection. Mm-hmm. That his love for his place was so evident, and his knowledge of his place was so mm-hmm. evident. And I looked at my life, and I was like, I look around, and they're like trees, those are some grasses, those are some shrubs. I am completely alien to my place. I literally don't even know a name of a plant. Uh-huh. I'm just disconnected. And that I wanted to love the earth like mm-hmm. he loved it. I wanted to be familiar yes. with my place in the way that he was. And that was just a shift in my mind. I'm like, that was a desire that formed up in my heart mm-hmm. that, okay, now how can I live this out? In this garden, it just got a hold of me. It was like, this is the way I can live this out. It created this great manifestation for it. Within 2 years, God, like over the course of that 2 years, grew me deeper and deeper and deeper. I just went crazy into gardening. And then God gave me this kind of radical call to farm with the poor. God had made this way, and God called me to farm with the poor. So after that year and a half, God was like, yeah, I need you to now do this with the homeless.
Yeah.
And he called me into this work that for the last 12 years had been doing at Community First Village in Austin. So my wife and I have a huge passion for homemaking. And that really is where our radical values come out. So radical, the literal, the word radical comes from rooted. Mm-hmm. If a plant, you know, put a seed in the ground, and that first root that kind of creeps down into the ground, the deep tap root, mm-hmm. that root is called the radical. Mm. And so my wife and I just have this passion for deep rooted things. And so as we began to work with the homeless, I've been working with the homeless several years before I met my wife, but that process helped us to see how ravaged the background mm-hmm. Of the people that were, you know, homeless. My concept was that they're houseless.
Yeah.
But the reality was there was a catastrophic breakdown, a family and mm-hmm. community that was behind every one of their stories. Mm-hmm. And so that the radical nature was, how can we then create a community that can root these people back into family mm-hmm. and community, mm-hmm. but back their family, but also creating new family structures and being willing to embrace and to uphold a community together. Mm-hmm. So today that community is, I think, 60 acres and about, I think they're going on 1,400 people.
Wow.
So it's the largest community with the homeless in the entire country. And it's very intentional about, like, how can we get people rooted into this place? Because we don't want them just to be housed. Mm-hmm. That's not the goal, housing for a second. The goal is to get someone connected to the ground, connected to each other, and doing something that they're passionate about.
Growing a garden and developing it into a garden ministry can be a powerful way for you and the church to reach out, meet needs, and strengthen your community in practical ways. The caring family-like support of church fellowship transforms the act of gardening into a more robust lifestyle for all, the poor in spirit, those hurting, anyone desiring skills or deeper relationships, and everyone who wants to see God at work in their life. Next, after a short break, we'll dig into the compost pile and talk about repairing and restoring the soil. We agree that building up the land, the community, is a joyous time of fellowship for all. And in their greenhouse, we taste of the sweet potential God intends. As Stephen says, there's a great capacity for the land to bring us together. The new garden farm community is seeing fellowship flourish and participating in the harvest that only God can bring. It's producing fruit that people need and desire. It's a lifestyle that gives beauty and celebrates the diverse hope in Christ for each new generation. New Garden Farm is cultivating community. I'm Kimberly Bloom, and this is Ripen, a gardening lifestyle magazine.
The PCT, Pacific Crest Trail, Continental Divide Trail, CDT, Appalachian Trail, AT, constitute what's called the Triple Crown of hiking in America. I fully believe that the way to people's hearts in the outdoors community right now in America is through relational evangelism. You can't really fully experience creation unless you know its creator.
Take a hike with Chris Carter and pursue the greater depths of outdoor adventure. Explore the richness of your relationship with others in Christ. Celebrate the fullness of God's presence and purpose for your life. Watch the full story now in Shout Outdoor Lifestyle Magazine, online at shoutlifestyle.com.
So, could you tell us a little bit more about the regenerative methods, but even like the home gardener or maybe someone who's trying to do a little bit more, what they could do?
Mm-hmm. I'd love to. Okay. And I'd love to show you over here where we've got leaf mold that we've been aging for 2 years. It is leaf mold that has just basically been delivered from the city of Greensboro. Everybody puts their leaves out at the end of the fall season. The city comes and collects that, and that becomes a free product for anybody in the city who wants it. And most of the homes, of course, don't. But we said, how much can we take? Can you believe that these are leaves that we're standing on right now?
Wow, it looks great.
You know, a compost distribution place is not gonna have a material anything like this, because the number one ingredient of this organic material is time. So we've had it on the property. It's been aged for 2 years. This in my hand right here is just leaves. But leaves are covered by mycelium, which is a tiny hyphae of mushrooms, and then also all that bacteria, and all of that has been broken down. And so when we put this as a mulch in our garden, we are creating that. We are modeling ourselves off of what nature does for itself. So biomimicry, we're creating our regenerative space in the pattern that God created in creating forests. So if you go into that forest and you scrape down underneath that leaf layer, you're going to find this, where nature does this on its own. But nature does it, if you will, inefficiently. We can do it even more efficiently than they than nature can on its own, using time. And the way that we have it right here, we've got it all gathered into a pile, and occasionally we'll turn it. So over the course of 2 years,
you have to ever wet it down, or just the natural rain?
No, we just get a certain amount of rain. And this material, you can just in feeling it, you can feel how rich it is.
Oh,
you can
yeah.
see how dark it is.
Yeah.
So for instance, when we planted our garlic, you know, we planted our garlic into that lasagna style bed that I talked about earlier with compost and loam. But then we put our garlic in the ground and it grew up. And then we put 2 inches of this on top of it several months later. And it's now been like 3 or 4 months since we planted that. Not a single weed, right?
Wow.
Because this is responding to the soil's needs and saying, oh, whatever you had a weed that was going to do for you, I can do for you better.
Wow.
So that's the kind of regenerative style that we love, because it actually means that we have to do less because the soil and the nature is doing more.
So you had to start this. This is like a bit of this here, what we're standing on, has been in like a 2 year process.
Yeah. And after about a year, it basically looked like this. And over here, you can see we've got about 50 truckloads worth. Literally, they just dumped.
I bet the city liked you bringing out, taking all those leaves.
They were very appreciative. It's such a beautiful byproduct, and it's one of these things that I don't know that people really understand, that when you're in a hyper-modern world, you have a lot more organic materials, which then can either become a waste or a treasure, depending on how you treat them. In a pre-modern world, to gather up all of these leaves would be a very laborious process.
So what can a home gardener do? What is some of the processes? And if they can't, you know, maybe wait 2 years, what are some steps they can do for regenerative
So the essence of our farming style is mimicking what the forest is doing. And the number one thing that the forest does is always keep the ground covered. The best thing to keep the ground covered with is living roots. The second best thing would be organic materials. Organic materials might be mulch, in this case wood mulch, or it could be compost. Mm-hmm. Compost that has been broken down over time that we're putting on top of the native soil, which in this case is clay. And so that that material, and especially once you get that material planted with living roots, you can do that in any environment whatsoever. You can do that within days.
When you say living roots, like
a plant. Like in this case, we've got garlic over here, we've got carrots over here. Those living roots are doing for the soil what the weeds would otherwise be doing. And so by having a constant succession of living roots, you're basically telling the soil, it's okay. It's okay. You're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. We're going to get you reset, have everything that you need, and then we're going to take care of you. Mm. Whereas our traditional style, actually the style that I learned at the farm that I interned at, was the style of tilling, where we're basically just turning the soil, and the soil's like, I hate you. And then it springs up a thousand weeds, and you're like, I hate you, and you're knocking at the weeds. It's terrible.
Taking torches to the weed.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's a martial environment. It's a military, you know, might.
It is. It's a fight, yeah.
But I'll tell you, I started my home garden. We just moved out here a year ago. And so, of course, I got my farms out here, but I've got my home garden, which is about a 50 by 70 foot garden.
Oh, that's a pretty good
size. So not a tiny little garden. I've got two toddlers that are running all over the place. So this is how I'm with them outside.
Playing in the dirt.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a dirt pile, which is my compost pile. It hasn't been spread out yet. But, you know, I started with a layer of cardboard. Uh-huh. And then I put in some loamy compost. So basically like loam mixed with compost that I went down to a...
And loamy, just make sure everyone understands, is really soft, you know, soft soil.
So yeah, and that loam specifically is kind of a mineral breakdown. So it's sand, silt, and clay, kind of in equal percentages. And then that mixed with compost together. So it's a consistent product. It looks like, you know, what native soil would look like if it were mixed in compost, as in this case, this bed is right here. There's obviously a lot of things you can't do with toddlers. One of those things is you can't turn a tiller on and turn this giant engine on and have them like playing right in the midst of you. But the style that I'm building, throwing down some cardboard, putting some loamy compost on top of that, and then I've got a spading fork or another tool called a broad fork, which I basically stand on, and then I rock that into the ground, and then I open up the soil. I just create an opening. I don't invert the soil. I just open it back up, and my kids love it. They love to get on it with me, and we're rocking back and forth, and they're 2 years old, three years old, and they're getting on this thing. And what you're doing is you're working your loamy compost into the subsoil, and you're also opening up air pockets for aerobic bacteria to make your plants are going to flourish in that environment. And then you plant directly into it. So I'm adding about 6 inches or so of this loamy compost. It serves as a mulch on top of the ground, and I weed for 5 minutes a week.
Wow, that's wonderful. Now, do you add any like earthworms or?
No, but nature did.
Okay,
so
once you bring
this,
that good soil, the earthworms want to be part of it.
And actually, kind of counterintuitively, when you put on layers of cardboard, which is the foundational layer, something about the breakdown of the materials of cardboard draws in earthworms, and I don't understand it.
Good to know. I just did lace a bunch of cardboard down.
they'll be coming up through that, and that cardboard within 3 or 4 weeks will be completely broken down.
Wow. That's regenerative.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And in that method, your soil is happier, you're happier. So I'd say in this model, this no-till model of gardening and farming, for the most part, you're mitigating a lot of what would otherwise be pest pressure. Slugs and pill bugs. Those in a highly organic matter rich environment, those two tend to be the things that predominate. But you know, you just mitigate that, you pull that off, you we do beer traps. So we'll take those little you know, cat food containers, the cans, you know, feed the cats, and then take the cans, we bury them so that the top is even with the top of the ground, and pour a little beer in there.
Okay.
Come back in a couple of days and you'll have 50, 100 dead pill bugs. that basically like had the greatest night of their life, and then they're done. And you feed it to the chickens.
There you go.
Yeah. So, and then the byproduct is I've got a couple of extra beers that I need to drink now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's good. We've been talking about the home gardeners, what they can do to have that really good soil to do regenerative gardening. But let's take it a turn. This is a big project. Let's say church community believers, they want to do something like this. What are the first steps that you would suggest for them to do?
I mean, honestly, I think where I started in Austin is actually a really good starting place. People's front yard and backyard, and you've got a small gardening team from the church that goes to your garden and is managing it, your garden and is managing it, and then you're harvesting that food and you're finding a reason, you know.
Like foodscaping in the yards. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're gonna find a pantry or you're gonna find a soup kitchen and you're gonna say, hey, I've got some produce, could you guys use this? And then you're making those relationships. Starting there rather than starting on the church property itself, I think begins to, it puts the focus where the focus needs to be. You need a team that can manage it. The church usually begins with the infrastructure. So they spend a lot of money, which they have the most of, and an infrastructure that builds something out. And it looks really good on day one where all the energy is. People say, oh, I want to be part of that building process. And then on day 40 or 60, and the weeds are growing and the nobody thought to plant another plant because they didn't care enough about connecting with that soup kitchen who actually needed it. So they actually don't know where it's all going to go. And the church doesn't have a place for it all. So that's what I see ends up, they end up front loading all that work. And then they end up creating a program that doesn't have a lot of meaning over time.
They don't have the vision yet. Didn't build bridges that they needed to do.
So it's those relational bridges and it's the team that are the fundamental things to make it work at a church.
Well, that goes to the next thing I was going to ask you about, the radical hospitality I was reading about. Because I think that kind of is a lot of, you know, the radical hospitality. But could you sort of give us like a, maybe a, what that looks like here, that radical hospitality?
Yeah, so, I mean, this church, I'd say this church was like a lot of other churches, that it had some people that were, you know, economically challenged and had some people that were more economically well off. In our case, we had not only economically challenged, but we had a lot of refugees. We intentionally created services for different refugee populations in the Greensboro area. And we had one common youth group for everyone to be together. So I looked at that and said, this is a beautiful thing that we're doing, but it's clear that even in the youth group, that our all of our kids are not necessarily playing together. They're not all hanging out together. That what a farm can do really well is it eliminates this kind of relationship, and now we have this relationship where we're working together, side by side, and we're engaged in an activity that's creating beauty, that's creating food, that's creating all sorts of positive byproducts, and we're talking while we're doing that. But then there's not a lot of pressure on this dynamic of what we're talking about, because we got to do this. So we created the Farm to Flourish program, where we said, how can we help our youth who are disadvantaged, coming from refugee backgrounds, and having a really hard time finding work? And how can we use that as an opportunity for them to come in to learn about gardening, but then to use that skill and their desire to grow as gardeners to now connect the church to
sort of
other people within, and so the farm then becomes this way of weaving together the different people at our church that, you know, after service, when you're hanging out and you're talking to people, some conversations are easier than other conversations. Whereas a farm can bring people together that are dramatically different, which is what the church was supposed to do. You know, from the earliest days, that's what the church was doing. It was bringing in these rich and poor and Greek and Jewish and, you know, all together in the same church. And it created a lot of tension. And early on, food was a part of that process.
So we were talking about radical hospitality and how the farm was bringing folks together and the youth together. What's been the, like, how are they all really meshing and what's the big impact there?
Yeah, so there's so many ways you can bring people together but then not actually connect.
Mm-hmm.
And use the word, the language of transactions.
Mm-hmm.
I intentionally created the Farm to Flourish program to be a bonding agent for the different parts of the church. And so whenever I interviewed the youth that were wanting to be in the program, I said, I need your father specifically to be part of that process. And in the East African culture, it's a very patriarchal culture. And in America, oftentimes those fathers are neglected and they're left out and they don't know how to be a part of their family because the culture is no longer affirming that. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I want to interview you with your father. And in that part of the process, are you going to commit to the things that we need you to do? And so it was shocking that we had these youth that weren't actually a part of our church, but their mom was.
Mm-hmm.
That our East African service had done a really good job of drawing in the mom, but then the father and the boys didn't want to be a part of that church.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have any reason to be a part of that church. They would just stay at home on Sunday mornings. So I connected to these youth, and I knew that they were in the orbit of the church. So, you know, brought them in through that interview process. Man, their father just fell in love with what we're doing out here and said, I can't believe a church is doing that. Within 2 weeks of creating our program, that father and both of those boys decided that they wanted to be baptized in the church.
Make a commitment to Christ.
But also a commitment to the church.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But they had been circling it for years.
Wow.
In this orbit, but never actually coming in. That it took a farm and it took garden.
They finally
classes.
Found home.
They found something that was affirming to them.
Mm-hmm.
That they were able to celebrate who they were as men, as doers, as makers,
mm-hmm.
and by creating a place for their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we were able to create a place for their souls.
As a home gardener, what is your five favorite things that you like to grow?
Our favorite thing, absolute favorite thing, is butternut squash or Hubbard squash.
Mm-hmm.
They last for months and months into the wintertime. You can grow a bunch of it. We're growing it vertically.
Oh,
we're
wow.
We're not growing it on the ground. We love sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I had one 25-foot bed, 50 pounds of sweet potatoes.
Wow.
And my wife hated me because I gave them away. and she said, what about me? What about us? Beefsteak tomatoes, I mean, our favorite mm-hmm. is Cherokee Purple, an heirloom
yeah.
variety of tomato. And canning that, and you can chop it up. You know, there's all sorts of different ways to preserve that so that you've got diced tomatoes. You've got all the tomatoes you're
mm-hmm.
ever going to need. So carrots, wintertime carrots specifically.
Wintertime, okay.
You know, if you get a carrot started in the fall, there is nothing sweeter than a winter carrot. People call them candy carrots.
Mm.
And so they're out in our field right now, and we got a hay bale on top of the carrots. You just pull the hay bale back and you harvest out the carrot. And it's so sweet, the kids can't get enough.
We like to give our people, the folks that we're interviewing, the opportunity to speak directly to our viewers, whether it's encouraging word or something on your heart you would like to share, feel free to now.
Well, I think that there's a great capacity of the land to bring us together.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never needed that more than now.
Yeah.
COVID did something that we are just barely understanding right now
mm-hmm.
in terms of alienating us from each other. People that were lonely became more lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And churches that were robust and had robust foundations
oh, yeah.
of people have a much narrower group mm-hmm. of people that are part of them now. And the church itself is teetering.
Mm-hmm.
Many churches are closing that before COVID were doing fine. The land has a way of bringing people together, bridging those divides, making things that seemed uncrossable,
mm-hmm.
Become things that we're doing together, that it becomes part of who we are. It's never been more important than now. It's almost like our bodies are responding to this alienation in the way that God made them to respond. How do you bring people together? God said, care
land.
For the land, cultivate and care for it. This is what I made you to do. And as you do that, it turns out that you bring each other together.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's definitely what we need.
Churches throughout the United States have found, along with many other churches throughout the world, that cultivating a garden is one of the best ministries for cultivating community. New Garden Farm in Greensboro, North Carolina, knows that the garden is where fellowship flourishes. To learn more about them and connect with them, go to ngpfarm.com. For help starting a garden ministry in your community, contact us at ripenlifestyle.com/contact. I'm Kimberly Bloom, editor of Ripen, a gardening lifestyle magazine. Subscribe to our free newsletter and be a regular part of our community. Together, we extend a hand of tranquility and a harvest lifestyle.